Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The only thing better than grinding all night for your side hustle is your roommate picking you up with Mickey D's breakfast. The perfect pickup deal.
There's a deal for every morning at McDonald's.
Right now, taste breakfast perfection when you get a warm and savory sausage McMuffin with egg for just $2.50. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal.
My name is Dave Hanrady and there will be no encore. Welcome to episode 57 of the No Encore Music Podcast. Cullum O'Regan.
Hello.
Craig Fitzpatrick.
Back. Woo!
I wasn't going to give you that level of fanfare.
Dope myself. Why not?
How you doing?
Been a long 2 weeks.
How have you been?
I've been at a wedding. I only leave the house these days to record podcasts or go to other people's weddings.
How was it?
Yeah, it was nice. It was beautiful. You know, the union of two people that are very much in love. Me sitting in one corner just watching it all unfold. Wait a minute, that was a different night out. No, it was good.
Do you feel inspired now? I mean, like when's it going to be your turn, man?
I know.
Always
I didn't
the
catch the bouquet. I didn't catch
here.
The bouquet, sadly. I got to a lot of weddings and never seemed to be asked to be the best man or a groomsman, so I don't know what the story is.
They'll make a movie about you, mate.
They will, yeah.
Presumably starring Jennifer Garner or Katherine Heigl or somebody.
I'm excited.
As Craig.
Yeah.
I could see it.
They could do it, yeah. Come on, it's 2017. It's
Jennifer
time.
Garner's kind of got your bone structure, yeah.
Cool. Oh, thank you.
I think it could work.
That's a compliment. She's a Hollywood actress.
Yeah. All right, cool. I'll take that.
Yeah. Cullum, you and I went to a different kind of union.
Very, very different.
Where, you know, we saw all kinds of emotional displays.
And Charlie Sterling's arse again.
Oh, God, it's getting ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stop going to wrestling, lads.
Well, I bought the ticket ages ago.
Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, great fun.
Well, I didn't have as much fun.
Yeah, because Dave was hungover to fuck.
I hit it pretty hard in the whiskey.
Dave turned Good Friday into a great Friday.
It was a good night. I enjoyed it, yeah.
Oh, was it? Yeah, your message on Good Friday was, I only have like a full bottle of whiskey to myself.
No, I was like, I only have 2 cans and 3/4 of a bottle of whiskey.
No, like 3/4.
Full, regular, so not a nagging. Yeah. And, so yeah, I ended up going to a house party.
What?
And it was good fun. And I mean, I recall, you know, the next day, waking up and being like, oh, it's probably like, you know, 9 in the morning. And it was 2. I'd slept all the way through to the afternoon, like a bear.
Oh, well, it was Easter. Yeah. All about rising.
So I vowed to not drink at the wrestling, as Cullum drank at the wrestling.
Yeah, they actually ran out of beer.
Because of how much you drank?
Not personally. I can't take sole responsibility for this.
What's going on with you? He's all right.
I had a great night anyway. I don't know about anyone else.
And you abstained for all of the wrestling.
100%.
You watched all of the wrestling.
4-hour show.
Not only sober, but kind of hungover still.
And kind of, yeah, like perking up from a hangover, sobering up. I was definitely still drunk when I woke up at 2 o'clock that day. And I immediately said, I don't think I'm going to go. But I went. It was myself, Cullum, and Brother Yosef.
Brother Yosef.
Shout out to Brother Yosef. He was there. And they were, you know, fucking getting it on. drink-wise, not with each other.
What?
In this really hot building, and you know, like lots of sweat flying around, and I'm just there drinking water, and it was an experience to say the least. What I will say, though,
is
there is a musical tie-in, though. I have to give a shout-out to the Kings of the North, the Northern Irish heel tag team, who are heels because they're from Northern Ireland. Because who knew that a terrible, terrible album from 2 years ago at this stage, which I gave a very scathing review to, could produce entrance music as good as this? That's The Day Is My Enemy by Prodigy there. And you gotta say, when that kicks in, and it's fucking cool.
Especially
right?
When it's complete with kind of like faux paramilitary drummers.
And flames. There was flames, Craig.
You're not selling it to me, lads.
Then let me just pivot towards something else that should surely get your heart racing. The night of all nights. The one that everyone in the music industry counts down to.
Is it time again?
It's that time, Dave. It's the Ivor Novello's.
Yay! Woo! Come on down.
It's the big one.
Yeah.
Whew. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here.
There is. They've just announced their nominees for this year. Lots of Michael Kiwanuka, which is fair enough. You can see him being critic's darling. But
certainly at the big one. Yeah. You're going to have Michael in there.
Also quite a bit of Laura Mvula, who, despite her, as we discussed a few weeks ago, having been dropped
by her
record label.
Well, this is obviously the only possible, like the greatest comeback imaginable. She's going to be on the world stage in front of every eye imaginable.
It's the big one.
Battling the mystery jets.
She might win the big one. The Ivor Novello's is a... They break down into strange categories. And the one that kind of jumps to me is most performed work.
Yes. So I don't quite understand this. Literally just tot up all the kind of royalties that have to go for like playing stuff live?
Yeah.
And then... So it literally is just the most performed, or do they then decide from like the top percentage which are the best?
It's between three songs, two of which are by Coldplay.
Well, surely if they have the numbers, they know who's number one immediately.
Yeah. Or is it most performed live?
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't get
it.
Yeah. Adele is in there as well.
First of all, I know it's a big one, but it seems to come around about every like 4 or 5 weeks, the Ivor Novello. So have we not constantly been talking about how baffled we are by this whole...
Wait a minute, you're not... Disparaging
no,
the big
not
one,
disparaging
are
disparaging the big one. I just don't understand why it exists.
Call him.
Defend the big one.
Please. It's the big one.
Do you know who Ivor Novello was?
Obviously.
Did you call him?
We've got a picture of him on the wall, don't we? We don't.
He was a Welsh guy who wrote romantic musicals back in like the 1920s and stuff. And he was kind of good looking. That was about it.
Okay.
He wrote Keep the Home Fires Burning, I think, so he got like big around World War One, and he was like a big pin-up because he was all like smooth and good cheekbones and stuff.
And then, but 20 years later, Vera Lynn came in and stole us thunder.
Yeah, his big song. I was checking like just on Wikipedia earlier on. Right, so the lyrics weren't by him, which is just all you know of it. And the tune, it goes, used traditional tune from such and such. So he just, it was like a mashup.
So the songwriting awards are named after a man who just put no effort into songwriting.
Yeah, Gary Barlow's won 6 of them. So you know it's the big one.
Yeah, that's how you know it's the big one, don't you?
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Like, who do we think is going to be turning up, surprising, coming back, you know, like...
I'm guessing Michael Kiwanuka and Laura Mvula will have it long.
They'll probably be there.
Seeing as they're most of the nominations.
It's the big one, you know, they wouldn't want to miss it.
No, certainly not. Right. Moving on, Dave's headphones are trying to spy on him.
They're the best headphones I've had in years. It was too good to be fucking true, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Something was wrong.
Yeah, following on from Kellyanne Conway's microwave, Bose have been accused of compiling information about the users of their wireless headphones, what they're listening to, what sort of podcasts. What exactly would show up in a psychological profile of somebody who's recently been listening to No Encore?
Wow. Ooh, interesting. So some guy in Chicago is taking out this lawsuit, and he's saying that basically when you download, I don't know if you have this app connected with the headphones, but there's some like Kinect app.
I don't have it.
All right. Well, it gives you extra features apparently, like being spied on. But he says he gave them all his details so he could connect to this app, and now he's upset that they can get information about him from it.
Yeah.
So essentially his point in the lawsuit is that what if you were listening to, and he says this in the lawsuit, like an LGBT podcast, or you had audio recordings of your Muslim call to prayer stuff. And it's like, then you could be discriminated against. Like, what?
You'd be a very progressive soul, I would say.
Yeah. But I mean, like, presumably as well, like in terms of compiling data and what you've been listening to. I mean, isn't that what every music service does now?
Yes. I don't know.
Google does as well. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, this is nothing new. And I feel, like, I'm just going to say it, I don't think he's going to win.
No. I think the fact you have to sign up and give over your details and probably tick some, like, terms and conditions.
Yeah, which no one ever reads. Yeah. Like, you know, look at all that text. No way. I'll just hit accept. Yeah. I want to get that wireless going,
Are we too blasé? Should we be worried about our, like, data being mined?
Nah, life's too short to worry about terms and conditions, Craig.
It's like the app I use when I go running. You know, occasionally I run by the canal.
By the canal?
Listen to albums.
When you've got a gap in between work and weddings.
I mean, I'm sure that could be used to hunt me down, like the dog that I am.
Why do you use an app? Why don't you just run?
Because, I don't know.
You're just slave.
It's an easy timer, and it gives you the distance, so you know how far you've run.
Okay.
It's kind of handy. But I also figured out there's a slight lag in it, so if they do use it to catch me, if I get slightly fitter, I'll be able to kind of, you know, outpace them.
Sure.
So I've got maybe a window of about a minute and a half before they'll be on me.
I have this image of like a Terminator robot running after Craig. It's pretty good.
I'm just saying, I'm not that concerned. Be grand.
And what's your average fitness here? Are you doing better?
My average fitness?
Your average...
Good to medium good. I don't know what.
What's your body mass index?
Oh, I don't know. Apparently that's not a real thing anymore.
It's not a real thing?
No. It's like all science. It just turns out none of it's true.
You've done a lot of yoga, have you?
I have,
Go to some strange, like, cult-like settings, perhaps?
Cult!
Who knows? I don't know. Look, we don't see Craig. He doesn't socialize with us anymore.
The cult of like not believing in body mass indexes.
He won't come to our wrestling shows.
I'll come to the next one, lads.
Will you?
Yeah, I might as well. Sure, I've been to one already.
Yeah,
it was good.
Your
crack.
Bloodlust was satisfied.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
That time you were like, I want to see a chair. I want to see chairs. And the bloke got split open. And Craig was like, oh.
I felt quite bad, actually.
Yeah, as we left the building and we saw him in an ambulance.
Oh, no, he wasn't in an ambulance.
He was sitting outside
the
Tivoli.
That was part of the show. That's just... That was effects.
Okay, well, look, I mean, it's been a strange week in the world of news. You might have guessed that there's not much going on. I might have sounded like I was from D4 there. I don't
you
know
were
I
going a bit wrong, Sal Kelly. Yeah.
Weird. Someone called me American last night.
Fair enough.
How did you feel about that?
I said that she was probably valid in the positing of such a thing, because I've been called American and posh since I was about 5 years of age.
Well, do you know what? There's no shame in that.
There's not, man.
Well spoken, young man.
It's not an affectation. And if it was, I've ran this far with it.
Yeah, keep it going, brother. Keep it going.
Someone who... the link. It was.
There's no link. Just go. There's no link.
Someone
here.
Who is American.
Someone who used to have a posh American accent. No, just go. Just go.
Prince is back in the news.
Yeah, new EP is now dropped.
Well,
it dropped and then it was picked back up again and thrown away, thrown into a vault somewhere. Yeah, so we're around the 1 year anniversary, right?
Mm-hmm. You made that great playlist. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was. I liked your words and all of that jazz. It was a good tribute, I thought.
Oh, thanks, man. Week's episode, by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about.
Yes, indeed, check it out. But there's another tribute that was trying to be paid in the form of an EP being released by engineer, collaborator of his, George Ian Boxall. It was stuff he'd been working on with Prince. Seems to mainly be culled from about a decade or so ago. And he held on to copies himself. Like, this wasn't stuff that went into the, you know, infamous vault. We haven't really heard much of. as yet much from. This was just stuff he had himself, and he kind of took it upon himself to put it together, and he was releasing it. Well, it should have been out by now. One song was dropped, and then, as you say, a skirmish, Dave.
Yeah, a skirmish. I mean, like, it's this kind of thing where I'm glad to see it happen, though, because, I mean, a big thing that we talked about around the time of Prince's passing was, will he now lose all of his mystery, all of the privacy that he appeared to fight so hard for? And, I mean, you don't necessarily want the floodgates to be open like this. And, I mean, like, quite frankly, we have enough. And I'm not saying I never want to hear an unearthed Prince track, but I'm always very wary when it comes to posthumous releases. Same with Bowie when some stuff came out after he passed away. I don't want to hear any more like new material from artists who have made their own choices and kind of deliberately put out works that they feel were good enough for public consumption and reflected them as an artist. I mean, like, who knows? I mean, like, for all we know, these could be tracks that he thought were terrible, and like, there's no way of knowing now. Like, you got one person's word for it, and
yeah,
quite frankly, I'm more than happy with what we got from Prince in his career. And I just find that this is always a shady area, and it doesn't necessarily ever really add to an artist's kind of legacy. If anything, it detracts.
Yeah, I mean, if it is a nice move, I will say, well, it's kind of just the Prince estate saying, no, we want control. So again, we're going to run into problems further down the road where they're picking what they think Prince would have wanted to be put out. Now, maybe they were closer to him. You would hope so, certainly. But yeah, I mean, we heard one track. I don't know if you guys took a listen while it was still up. Wasn't really doing a huge amount for me.
No.
It was from an interesting time kind of in his career where he did have a bit of a comeback on the back of Musicology. So people were excited once again. And he released some decent stuff after that. But this was one of his kind of still very gospel-tinged, with kind of a guitar workout and quite right on, you know, taking a social look at things. But a bit bland, really, wasn't it?
It was a bit bland. Yeah. It was a bit workmanlike. And it felt like almost unfinished or something. Like, it didn't feel like, well, this is a polished release.
Yeah, it certainly didn't feel like, okay, here's the kind of cream of the crop of, like, you know, such a prolific guy that just decided not to put out stuff he thought would probably be hit singles, but just couldn't be art.
I mean, it was...
This wasn't the kind of grand premiere of that kind of stuff.
It came right around, like, Planet Earth, which, as you'll recall, he gave away free with the Mail on Sunday.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, the height of his creativity may not have been. But, yeah, I mean, like you say, I suppose, you know, it's good if... the control of Prince's music and Prince's creativity is kind of, you know, kept the way that he would have wanted. You worry that, you know, if the price is right, that's going to be compromised. But what can you do? Really?
Not that much.
Well, not that much.
We can't do anything about it.
No.
I'll probably listen to it all as well, which is, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Nice, just spit in the man's face.
Part
that's
of the
job.
Problem. Part of the problem.
Is that our job? Does that make
us spit on the man's
does that
face?
Make us, does that make us musical grave diggers?
Of course, yeah. But that's part of journalism, isn't it?
I guess.
Talk to anybody who works in newspapers.
Dig.
Follow the money.
Like. No, I know people who like work in newspapers, and they're just like, you know, obviously, like, you know, it's very sad and all, but like, you know, wars are great for business.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, on that note, another non-linkable thing. On No Encore, we like to celebrate Irish music, you know, kind of a worthy nature. A couple of weeks ago, I had the chance to catch up with A couple of weeks ago, I had the chance to catch up with Josh from a band by the name of Elenchus. They're from Galway. They make great metal. It sounds like this. And my interview with Josh sounds like this.
Okay,
so delighted to be joined by Josh from Elenchus. Josh, you just told me that you're a big TV buff, so...
Well, I wouldn't like to make too grandiose claims, but I like to watch TV shows.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Okay.
I'll ask for your top three favourite TV shows.
Oh, God, I hadn't prepared anything.
No, like actually, there you go, that's what I do.
My top shows, I'll just tell you like what I've watched in the last year or so.
Not last, but okay.
Well... Oh, God damn, this is difficult. No, I'm just going to go top three. Okay, so X-Files is in there because I love X-Files. And Twin Peaks, it's got to be in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now I'm just on a total classic TV buzz. And I might as well stay there and put in like The Wire or something.
Nice, but, I mean, good choices.
They're classics, you know. But there are some great recent shows like The Leftovers. Have you seen that?
I love The Leftovers, that's man. Thank you so much show. Because like, I feel like no one's watching it.
Nope.
And I know there's only one more season to go, and I'm kind of happy with that.
Yeah.
But I feel like it has no right to be as good as it is.
No, and there was an episode in the last series, which I think was like...
I know what you're going to say. You know, International Assassin, the ninth episode. Yeah, yeah. Unbelievable.
That was just blew my mind.
Unbelievable. And both seasons have ended like with this note of just kind of like... I'm just like this heart-stopping moment of like almost joy, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's so... It really... Yeah, man, I love that show.
It is a great show.
I think it's brilliant.
Another good show, which... probably people won't agree it is called Banshee. Have you ever heard of Banshee?
A friend of mine raves about it, and I've yet to go there.
It's
I know
like
it's schlocky and trashy,
top,
yeah.
Like trashy crap, but it's I just found it really entertaining.
Deadly.
So do check it out.
How do you feel about the upcoming Twin Peaks revival?
I am not too sure about it. You know, remakes always going to be a little bit of a weird thing, but you know, I'm a massive Twin Peaks fan, so I'm going to watch it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel like with Lynch and Frost both on board and like doing the whole thing themselves and kind of fighting so hard for their cast, their budget, their everything, like, and it's the first thing he's made in over 10 years, so I'm optimistic. I mean, of course, yeah, I think returning to the well is always dangerous, but
yeah, well, X-Files really proved that.
See, I never really X-Files to me was a TV show when I was younger, like I'd see the odd episode,
okay,
and I tried to get into it about 10 years ago and I thought that it looked dated then.
Yeah.
And I don't think I can go back.
You gotta just get past that, you know. It's like I'm going back watching Homicide: Life on the Street, you know, it looks so dated, but you gotta just get your mind into that mind frame.
Yeah.
Like it's
even The Wire looks dated,
and I'm, you know, what was I like, 6 or 7? You know? But yeah, but not great.
You can appreciate the nuance more. The reason Josh is here today is because he's in Dublin. His band Elenchus, who are a fantastic metal band from Galway, I'm a big fan. You are recording a music video, which of course will be recorded by the time this episode goes out. But what is the plan? Because you've been quite adventurous with your music videos in the past.
Yeah, well, this is actually something completely different. We're doing like a live studio video, so this is not like a PR stunt video like Over the Fire was, which I would shamelessly say it was a PR stunt. This is just, we're going to play the whole of the EP Hunger and then just put out some live videos because, you know, I'm a promoter as well. So something I always really like to see from a band if I'm checking them out, if I want to put on a gig or whatever for them, is to see what they're like live. So really for that, you either need a really, really well-recorded live video from a gig, which is often very difficult to get because, one, you know, the sound is difficult and the cameras and everything. So we figured we'd do like a studio session. So we're going in and we're just going to play the record in its entirety and just release that over the next few months, I guess.
Very good. You mentioned Over the Fire, Under the Smoke there, the PR stunt. But I mean, like, for anyone who hasn't seen that video, first of all, check it out. But also, it's essentially one take of you walking through Galway.
Well, it wasn't me personally.
Oh, sorry, not you personally.
No,
it's
Chris from the band.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, for him, like, I mean, was that like, who suggested this and who was kind of like...
Well, I don't know, we've debated over whose idea it was, but I'm pretty sure it was my idea.
So he's walking through the streets, and he's basically screaming along to the song,
yeah,
seven minutes of it.
I guess, like...
Everyone's just looking at him like he's fucking escaped some kind of lunatic
exactly,
asylum.
Yeah. So there's kind of two ways of looking at it. One was just like, you know, the real basic conceptual idea for the video where, like, you know, have you ever just walked down the street with your headphones on really loud and been like, you know, I'd really just love to like get into this music and really just scream along to it or whatever?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah, like anyone who's a metalhead has done that, you know. So there was that side of it, you know, of just performing it. But there was another kind of more, I guess, kind of intellectual side of it. I don't want to sound pretentious, but it was like, you know, for us... In Ireland, particularly in a market where, you know, heavy music and metal and stuff like that isn't always that well received or isn't really that kind of common. You know, you don't see it in hot press that often you know, in the mainstream media that much. So there was an element of us being like, you know, this is what we do. And we're absolutely proud of it, and we're just going to go out and do it in the street, and you're going to have no choice whether to listen or not. It's there. Do you know what I mean? So there was a kind of element of that to it as well.
So was there music being played, or was it just him shouting?
Oh, the music's played on his headphones.
On his headphones. But for people who are like seeing him walk down the street.
No, it's just complete normal day, middle of summer in Galway.
Yeah, it looked very kind of festival atmosphere in terms of like the amount of people on the streets. And again, like everyone's looking, people are like trying to mug for the camera. And like, there's just that kind of, you know, like, again, because to be fair, it's like you see anything out of the ordinary when you walk down the street, you can't help but crane your neck and just look at
it.
So.
I mean, it was hilarious to shoot. Like, it was one of the funniest experiences of my life. Like, you know, because we had this like line of us. So Chris is at the back, say, you know, walking down the street, and then there's the camera facing him, and then my brother, who's the drummer in the band, was kind of guiding the cameraman, because the cameraman's walking backwards, so my brother's like got his hands on his shoulder guiding him back, and then I'm behind him again, like just kind of funneling people out of the way, because, you know, like there was a couple of close calls where we nearly, like, you know, knocked down a child or, you know, something like that, but so it was just this like weird posse of us, and, you know, after we shot it, people were like, what the hell is that? What are you guys doing? And there was like a guy coming up, he's like, is this like a call out video for like a wrestling match or something like that? And we were like, no.
It does look like that.
Music video.
To be fair, I could definitely see that. I mean, was this totally guerrilla? Did you have to obtain permission, or were you like, fuck that, let's just do it?
No, we just did it. We just did it, yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully that doesn't land you in any kind of hot water.
No, I mean, like, we haven't, we didn't ask anyone's permission or get sign any forms or anything, which is lucky because there's a lot of people in the video, and if we would have had to try and find them, it would have been very difficult.
It's a lot of faces to digitize as
Yeah, I mean, if anyone wants to sue us, you know, we're here. Come on, bring it on.
You mentioned, like, you know, metal and kind of not getting a lot of mainstream publicity and that kind of thing, and I feel like a lot of bands kind of support the scene themselves. Like, you know, I know you're tight with Bitch Falcon, amongst other kind of acts.
Yeah.
But, like, do you think, I mean, like, you know, like there is a negative perception of metal? I mean, like, I think, you know, it's obviously... It's not palatable for everyone's ears.
Yeah, I mean, I could rant about this for ages.
Do.
So
you got the mic, man. Go for it.
But no, I mean, like, okay, well, first of all, I think the culture in Ireland for heavy music has not been great over the last number of years. So, you know, you've got like a lot of like small scenes and guys who are like really into the underground kind of ideals of it. And that's totally fine. And, you know, like where we're from, Galway is like... punk hardcore scene, that's what, you know, was in Galway for years, and that's kind of where we came from, and that's great. And in Dublin you've got like a metal scene, and a lot of these kind of small scenes don't really want that much attention from the mainstream. They're not bothered about it, they're just like guys, they just want to play music and do the thing, and that's totally fine. I totally understand that attitude, you know. And then so the kind of metal bands and stuff that were like in, you know, in the culture, a lot of the time they were more generic. They were more like, you know, old school thrash bands or whatever. Like, you know, the bands that were pushing themselves were probably a little bit more generic than the bands that were like in the underground and more exciting, doing more interesting stuff. They're just like, they don't care. They're like, do their own thing. You know, I'm going to stay over here and we can play to the same, you know, 100 people every 6 months or whatever. So I feel like, you know, publicly, you know, or in the media, a lot of the quality of the music wasn't really coming across. So, you know, like for your average Joe, when you say, oh, when I say like, I'm in a metal band, you know, the first thing that comes into their head is like, oh, Metallica. Yeah. You know, and they're like imagining this whole like 80s thing or like metal kind of stereotype, you know, which is not true, you know? So I think that needs to change. And I think by like people who are in the scene these days, making an effort to kind of get out and push ourselves out there into different outlets and really show people what we're doing and not to be afraid of it. I mean, like, you know, it's almost like taboo to say like, oh, you know, I'd like to make a living out of playing music in a metal band or something, you know. And it's like, that's crazy. Like, you know, why is it, you know, taboo to say that, where you say, oh, well, I'm gonna make my career as a plasterer, and that's almost like, oh, cool, well done, mate.
It's a trade, it's a recognized trade, whereas music is still, like, a lot of people, like, you know, we talk big in this country about the arts and how Ireland is full of all these creators and poets and, you know, painters and musicians, and yet getting support for these people seems to be such a battle.
It is, and there's, like, a thing people always say about making art in Ireland is it's not till you leave the country, until you go somewhere else, that and you get recognition somewhere else, that people in at home will start to take you seriously. And I think that's true. I mean, it might be a sad thing in some ways, but in another way, it's good, because you do need people to drive and to push on and to get out there. Now, maybe we can make it a little bit easier for them. That's kind of where I would come at it, because I'm, you know, as I said, I'm a promoter. I run a promotion company in Galway that pretty much only showcases heavy acts, and that's the way I've always wanted to do it, because, you know, I wanted to give those acts like a good venue to play in. Like, so we're working with the Roisin Dubh for years, and they've got like a really good reputation, so then, you know, that bleeds into us as well, and then into the bands. And like, my whole philosophy on it is to try and legitimize these bands a little bit more. you know, show them that they can make money at their gigs, they can successfully go out there, they can put out records. And we've just launched this small label with Feast. Sorry, I should have said that. Feast is the name of the promotion company and the record label that we're launching. But, you know, and that's the same thing. We're just getting our website up, and it's all about, like, a platform, you know, somewhere where people can go and see, like, wow, there's this great stuff going on in Ireland. It's presented really nicely. You know, these guys know what they're talking about. Like, a lot of the time we are having to coach the bands through, like, you know, maybe rewrite your bio, man, or like, why have you not got a band camp, or, you know, this kind of stuff.
Reach out to a music journalist to write your bio for you. I do good rates.
Well, good to know. But you know, so it's all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm kind of taking it on as a little bit of a quest to try and just help heavy bands in Ireland to get more exposure and to just further themselves.
That's really a very healthy attitude to have, though. I mean, Alenka's been around for a little while now. I mean, you know, you've been around since about 6-7 years at this stage.
Yeah, 2010.
Yeah, and you put out 2 full lengths, followed by the Hungry EP. So, like, I mean, it's good to kind of find a new territory, I suppose, as opposed to just kind of being, like, annoyed at how slow the scene can be. I mean, like you do get victories. I mean, like, Chris and Gana Family have just won the Choice Music Prize. And,
yeah,
like, even on, like, their record, there's lyrics about how their parents don't recognise their music as, like, a commodity.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, little things like that, or, I suppose, big things like that, and, like, do make a difference. But it's kind of a shame that, like, it's for certain bands who have a more niche variety, you really do got to kind of take it to the people as hard as you can. And, like, okay, gig wise I mean, like, I know we talked off mic there about Dillinger Escape Plan.
Mm-hmm.
We're big fans.
Yes.
We've seen them live, I think we're both the same gig apparently, twice.
Yeah.
Which one did you prefer, the Village in 2008 or the Academy in 2011? I know they were both amazing, but, like, the Village to me was just like, what? I almost didn't go to that show. Me and my friends were working in Drogheda. We were living in Drogheda at the time. And, like, we were both feeling sick that day. And at one point, we were not going.
Yeah.
At one point, like, we had actually made a decision to not go. And we were only kind of new into them. Like, I kind of knew them from when I was in school, and, like, one of the guys had Calculating Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Dave, I played a Milk Lizard one day, and he just lost his fucking mind.
Oh, really?
So when then this gig got announced, we were like, well, we got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we found ourselves in the pub after work watching, like, a United Arsenal game and just being like, fuck it, will we go? Like, yeah, we get the bus, it's an hour-long bus, we'll go up. And, man, I am so happy I made that decision.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
gig was un-fucking-believable.
But sometimes it's things like that that really, like, and I'm not trying to be, like, dramatic, but they do change your life. You know, you don't really know, like, I mean, how, like, an experience like that can really impact you years down the line. I remember that show particularly well because it was my brother Rory, who I talked about a minute ago. It was his 18th birthday, just about, I think, about like 3 days after that show. And we were, you know, like, all of us in the band were really into Dillinger at the time. And, you know, we'd got him tickets for the show for his birthday, even though he was only 17 when it was on. And lo and behold, we got there and the security wouldn't let him in. And he'd never got to see them on that run. So that was really shit. So, yeah, the rest of us went in and, if I remember right, we just drank loads of whiskey and we just went crazy in the pit. But it was like, it was so intense. It was a very, very intense show. And
yeah, it was amazing.
For me, that was like a bit of an eye opener at like how intense a gig can be, you know. But which one was better? I think I prefer that one, but I had a really good time at the second one as well. Particularly because Greg just gave me the mic and I got to do some vocals.
Nice.
It was like a total fanboy moment, you know. But like,
I actually had that. I'm not a singer, I'm a drummer, and I cannot sing. but I had a moment like that at a Converge show in Whelans, where, like, myself and my friend, we were kind of up the front and we were kind of like, let's hang back and watch it. But that just can't happen at that kind of a gig, especially in Whelans.
Yeah.
And we found ourselves at the front and we were like holding on to the band's monitor amps, like, one, for dear life, and two, because they kept moving. So, like, they were standing on our fingers, presumably as a way of thanking us.
Yeah.
Guys were jumping off the fucking stage. One guy, like, came down on the top of my head, like I was like, that's a broken neck for sure, that's me done.
Yeah, well, Converge is like crowd surfing from
chaos,
like,
man,
the first
yeah.
minute to the last minute.
But Jacob Bannon, like, passed the mic around during Worms Will Feed, Rats Will Feast.
Oh, awesome. Yeah,
and there's a video online and you can look it up and you get to hear me shout into the last bit of the song, and I kind of nailed it.
Nice. That's awesome.
But Converge are, I think, are another band that we kind of agree on. I saw that you recently did a feature with the Thin Air where you're showing off your vinyl collection.
Yeah.
And you got like a nice copy of Jane Doe in there.
Yeah, that's like the I bought a few years ago. It's like a double LP blue vinyl. It's gorgeous,
beautiful.
But yeah, they're one of my favorite bands as well. They're great. I mean, I'm kind of getting to this point now where, like, with you know, like, all these bands that are similar to Alenkis, where I'm like, you know, I'm bored of being compared to them.
And sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, it's a natural thing, you know. It happens all the time. But I kind of just, like, I don't want to talk about I don't always want to talk about like the bands that people expect us to talk about. It's like, you know, I did a piece for the interview or for the advertiser in Galway last week, and we were talking about some of the inspiration for Hunger and the lyrics behind that. And I just kind of in conversation mentioned FKA Twigs because she was like a really just like obscure reference for some of the inspiration for the idea of the record. And the interviewer was like, FKA Twigs? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like that's, I would have never guessed that, you know. So I'm trying to steer a little bit away.
Well, from, is that because Hunger kind of deals with the aspect of like writing it from different characters' point of view?
Yeah, it was. It was more to do with kind of duality. And I mean, I could actually be wrong in the way that I've judged her lyrics and stuff. But I know particularly a couple of tracks that the way I perceived it was that she was singing this really beautiful, soulful music and like really beautiful voice and everything. But the words that she was actually saying were kind of like violent and quite dark and stuff. And I just loved that idea. I loved that kind of juxtaposition between the light and the dark. So that's kind of what the inspiration for like having such like flowery lyrics on Hunger was, you know. So we got like lines like I love you honey bunny and stuff like that. So that was like kind of the inspiration for that. It was like, let's do really 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 intense music and let's pair that with something that's like not like that.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, like, well, first of all, have you seen Mr. Robot? To go back to TV for a second,
I have seen Mr. Robot.
You won't listen, you won't hear 2 weeks by FKA Twigs the same way again after using that show. But also I'm wondering, like, it goes back to that kind of American Psycho Patrick Bateman thing of, you know, people don't just re-listen to the lyrics but they should. But for you, like, that's an even harder sell because of the style of vocals in Alenkis. And it's like, and I guess, like, you know, in order for someone to really kind of, you know, like, I'm all about, like, you kind of talk about interpretation there and, like, you know, like looking at her lyrics and being like, have I got this right? I've written fucking 1,000-word reviews and like on people where I'm like, I think they're saying this. And like, I live in fear of them coming along somehow on Twitter or something and just going, no, 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 you're completely wrong, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would just shatter me. But like, but that I live for subtext. I mean, like, I love subtext music. I love kind of going on my own quest, my own kind of journey and just running with it. But I feel like I couldn't just, like, you know, like tell you what, you know, Hunger is about, but I'm sure it's different to you than it will be to me and that it will be to someone who hears it.
That's kind of the point, you know. I mean, I think you put one intention in when you make something, and that's fine. That's your intention. That's what its meaning is to you, and that's why you made it. But I think you're absolutely right. That's what the beauty of interpretation is like, you know, you can take a lot of different things, you know. Because I used to be like a massive Tool fan when I was a teenager, and, you know, I remember like a few years later being like, oh, that's not the lyric at all, you know. It's like, I've been singing that for years.
I think everyone has those moments. I'm pretty sure like people, people sing "Smells Like Teen Spirit" all wrong all the time.
Yeah,
like you're just like, what's he saying in that chorus? Tool are a perfect circle, by the way. If you had to pick one,
oh god, you're asking me difficult questions today.
Journalist, man.
Yeah, I guess so. Tool or a perfect circle? Tool. It has to be Tool.
Perfect circle for me.
Really?
Yeah. Like, it's a hard, it's Sophie's Choice. Yeah. But, like, I mean, I love it. Three Libras alone. That song is fucking.
But they only have, like, two decent records, really.
Yeah, although they're working on a new one. Yeah. Apparently coming out.
So are Tool, apparently.
Yeah, like, well, who the fuck knows? I mean, like I've heard that. That's like the Chinese Democracy, like, in the Frank Ocean shit
it's
right
like
there.
A running joke,
it's definitely happening.
Tool are working on a new album.
But yeah, so you mentioned as well, like, you know, coming over from Galway, that it was Ed Sheeran mania over there at the moment.
Yeah, God. Like, that lad, like. I don't know. Yeah. I was working yesterday, and, you know, one of my colleagues came up and she was like, "Oh, did you see Ed Sheeran's in town? Like, blah blah blah. He's in O'Connell's." And I was like, "So what? Like, I mean, I'm not a fan of Ed Sheeran. You know, whatever. Like, but just that level of hysteria for anybody for me is kind of crazy. But I mean." Yeah, whatever. Let him at it. You
so
know?
Galway girl hasn't actually earned a backlash over there. If anything, it's
In Galway.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd say there's probably a lot of cynical assholes like me who are like, yeah, fuck that guy. But then, yeah, there's a lot of people who probably love it, and they're really happy that Galway's being promoted. He shot his video on Shop Street as well.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what he was doing last
night. So he stole your idea.
He basically stole our idea, yeah.
You went from 2 full-length albums to an EP. What was the decision there?
Well, our full-lengths were a lot of work, and they're very diverse, and they're very different. Like, not just from Hunger, but within the records, they really change from, like, you know, proggy post-rock bits to mathcore bits, and they're kind of like all over the place like that. That's how I see them. So we particularly wanted to really focus our sound. So we were just like, let's just write something short and sweet where we can't mess around too much, you know, and we'll just get, you know, basically it was more of like a concept idea, like same way with the lyrics and everything, where we were just like, I haven't got into it, but the lyrics are a story, you know, and we were just like, let's just like work on this one piece. So I was actually written as one piece of music. Like for us, it's easier to write like a 1 minute 15 or 1 15-minute song than it is to write like, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minute songs or whatever. So we wrote this 15 minute song and we were like, okay, well, we can chop it there and chop it there. And it's 4 songs. But yeah, I think the main drive for it was that we wanted to write something that was fun to play live, because we had like half of our songs were like really intense and lots of energy, and then the other half were kind of slower, more chilled out, you know, which are also fun. But the fast stuff was really what we were, the fast heavy stuff, we were like, this is so fun, we enjoy it so much, you know. And really, like, you know, when you're making music for yourself, a lot of the time you really just want to enjoy yourself, you want to enjoy what you're doing and have fun. And so that's really why we did that.
Very good. Well, Hunger is a fucking beast, man. I absolutely love it. Well,
thank you very much.
I guess to wrap up, what I would ask you is a question I've been asking people kind of lately, and I'm probably going to make a thing of it. It's a really unfair question, especially okay. with no prep. But okay. if for whatever reason you were, you know, abducted and the torture that you were experiencing was for someone to make you listen to the same song for 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
One day of it, just one. And, you know, bathroom breaks permitted and, you know, the odd bit of food yeah. here and there. But you got to listen to one song on repeat.
For 24 hours.
What are you going with?
Oh, God. I'm going to go with a Neil Young song. But what song? What song?
That voice for 24 hours. I like Neil Young, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, like, you see, I just listen to so much Neil Young anyway, there just wouldn't be that much of a change.
All right.
Let's go for The Needle and the Damage Done.
All yeah, right. 24 hours.
Great song. Yeah, awesome. I mean, I'm going to be gloomy as fuck after
that. Josh Malenkis, thank you so much for coming to No Encore.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, sir. Man. So that's Josh from Malenkis there. Thank you for your time, man. They're well worth checking out if you're into the Dillinger Escape Plan and that kind of thing. I know he's going to hate me for saying that, but, you know, I just did. Deal with it, mate.
All right, let's go for some new tracks from this week. And the title track from Lana Del Rey's forthcoming album has arrived. This is what it sounds like. Gotta dance till we die. Yeah, as Craig had predicted, and I think as many people expected, The Weeknd pops up to repay the favour, I guess, for Lana Del Rey's cameo on his record. That is the title track of the album Lost for Life. What do you reckon?
I think we... It happened already, but like it's finally time, if it wasn't already, to accept that Lana Del Rey, or the Lana Del Rey character, is never going to stop talking about Hollywood. Like, it's in the first lyric of this song.
Yeah.
I believe the kind of the one of the accompanying images is them sitting on the Hollywood sign or something. So, you know, it's there's no point in kind of being like
there's no point.
But there's no point in kind of like being like, oh man, really? Like it's very set in stone at this stage.
Yeah.
I've always been a bit of a Lana Del Rey skeptic. And I really like this song.
Okay.
I think it works very well. I think it does the Lana Del Rey thing a lot better than some of her other kind of more hailed works. I will maintain The Video Games is not a good song.
Ridiculous. And, it's a great song.
I actually quite like that song now, I must say.
As far as The Weeknd as well, like coming off the back of a bloated record which had highlights, but they were unfortunately, you know, drowned out by so much filler. Mm. He sounds great on this as well.
I was about to say, he sounds brilliant. And like Lana Del Rey was... I mean, it's not necessarily her fault, but, you know, it was kind of this throwaway cameo on The Weeknd's album.
Yeah, she added kind of slight different dimension without it being a really substantial, what you'd call a song.
She had more to do on the previous record, Beauty Behind the Madness, on the track Prisoner.
Yeah.
But I do think they work well together. And I think that, you know, in this kind of lullaby, dreamlike...
But I think in terms of the exchange of, like, these last albums, she's definitely come out on top. in terms of his contribution here.
Yeah, 100%. But they like they seem to kind of be simpatico musically in a strange way. I mean, they kind of represent two sides of LA or something like some kind of like in this kind of strange excess where she's a bit more ethereal and he's a bit more, you know,
Canadian.
I guess, yeah. Good point. But like, you know, but it's all like this kind of like, you know, this Hollywood excess.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Like in the Hollywood Hills and this kind of shite, but like which, you know, the more The Weeknd does that kind of thing, the less you kind of find him interesting. I guess Lana Del Rey is, you know, that kind of Twin Peaks kind of thing going on, and
yeah,
it is what it is, and I find that like it works for me sometimes, it doesn't work for me other times. I know one of her friends, Josh, thinks she's a very underrated artist, and I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. But this is really good. I think this has really good command. I think the hooks are strong. I think it gets to the point quickly. I think it's got very good replay value, and I think it's very well put together. I think as these kind of lush cinematic, you know, sweeping arrangements go. It's a hit for me.
Yeah, you see, this is the thing. I do like the arrangements, but I'm not sure if they suit her vocal style. I mean, like, I'm not a big fan. I am a skeptic, as you described yourself, Dave. And I just feel as though, you know, like, when there's so much going on, that sort of whispered intimacy just kind of gets lost for me. I think that's why, you know, probably fares best when it goes to big hooks, and indeed when it goes to the voice of Abel, who is Big Abel, who really does contribute a lot to this track, probably saves it, to be perfectly honest.
I will just confirm, Dave, by Josh, you didn't mean Father John Misty, who also defends her to the ends of the earth.
And our friend Josh Hughes, our other friend Josh Tillman.
There you go. I quite like this as well. I mean, following on from the last track we got, I think she is pushing forward a bit. Maybe not so much aesthetically with
this.
Well,
I mean, people are shocked that on the album cover she's smiling.
Yeah. There's a lot of positivity, I think, around her at the moment. And I think she's kind of grown up a bit. I mean, she still is making those big cliched references, which she is never going to stop doing. I mean, even in this song, she's now, you know, become self-referential where she's quoting old songs of hers, so it's just going to become an absolute, I don't know, clusterfuck. But no, I do think she's getting somewhere, and she was talking about this record and how initially she was planning on it being a kind of 50s and 60s Shangri-Las or Joan Baez type thing, and I was just like, my god, that would have been everyone's like fucking worst nightmare. But then the climate of like the political situation in the US and things around that, she said she just kind of started thinking,
dragged her kicking and screaming into the 60s.
Late 60s. Post JFK getting shot. But then she thought, no, she wanted to do something that appealed more to her younger fan base and actually try and say something. And I think she is kind of trying to say something a bit. I mean, she just got back from dancing at Coachella and she wrote a song about Donald Trump that she posted on Instagram. So that's about as good as you can expect from Lana Del Rey in terms of, you know, if you, she's not going to go full Bob Dylan. But
this is true.
Never go full Bob Dylan.
But I liked it and I agree. I think The Weeknd works well where they kind of, they dip into each other's universe as well and kind of, raise them kind of as characters even more. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to what she ends up doing over the whole LP.
Okay, let's go for a band that have kind of, like, some bands kind of stand the test of time in a strange way. They kind of, like, hang on after, like, their genre or their kind of fad or their scene or whatever, you know, like, dies out a little bit. One of those bands is Paramore, who have returned with Hard Times. Let's have a list. Gentlemen,
I am not in the slightest bit surprised that you've timed for Paramore. I bet you had a massive crush on Hayley Williams years ago.
First of all, I never said I had time for Paramore. Second of all, I did not have a crush on Hayley Williams. And third of all,
sexist.
I would say they had two okay songs.
Oh, so he did like them.
Yeah,
there we go.
No, Misery Business is a
that
tune.
Sort of emo punk tune, yeah. Style thing.
Misery Business is a tune.
I'll bet you owned early albums.
No, I never, no? I never hopped on board the Paramore train.
Good job.
I think they did a track for, like, of all things, the Twilight soundtrack called
Of Course.
Decode, which I quite liked. good drums in it.
That sounds horrendous.
And they had one song called Emergency that was okay, but that's about it. I never heard a full album start to finish. It was never quite my thing. I felt a bit too old for the emo thing while it was happening, and I kind of pinned my colours to the My Chemical Romance mast anyway.
Well, is this going to change your mind?
With a bit of Fall Out Boy in there. No, it's not, because this is Tropical Popical, baby.
Uh-huh.
And it's fine. Like I think it's pleasant. I found it enjoyable. I think it totally works for what it is, but what it is a bit naff.
Yeah, I think it's probably the best thing they've ever done, just because I can actually listen the whole way through. But LaRue wants her royalties, essentially. I mean, really does.
She's going to be splitting them with a lot of people, man.
You know what? True.
This is Alphabeat.
Oh, go on,
if you remember them. This
Fascination.
Is, yeah. Oh. This is Mr. Wives, or another American band sound exactly like this. Is it wrong that I kind of like it?
There you go.
It's a seductive sound, but don't go into the light.
But I mean, you see, this is the thing. I mean, like, as well as everything that it, you know, very much sounds like, and that's partially because of the vocals. You know, I mean, like, the guitar in the chorus, like, that's just Nile Rodgers. That's Get
Lucky.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it's
just Nile Rodgers. The middle eight is literally just Talking Heads Once in a Lifetime. Those swirly synths.
Oh, okay.
It could be sampled. It's the exact same. It's opening with like marimbas, like it's fucking Lionel Richie. But this is really just kind of like not a pick of fat on it pop writing.
Which is fine. More of this.
Yeah, and I must say, I'm actually quite impressed. It's like literally, I think like 2 seconds over 3 minutes. And yeah, I quite like this. They've admitted themselves they've been on an absolute 80s binge.
Oh, and a bit late to the party, guys. Come on.
Well, rather, but you know what?
It does feel very 2006, I agree.
Yeah, but if you, if you're turning
by
out...
By way of 1986.
For me, if you're turning out singles that sound like they could be written by like Stock Aitken and Waterman or something, that's not necessarily a terrible thing.
I don't know.
Look,
just
Lady Gaga put out a new track this week that was just so Gaga by numbers.
Yeah.
This was a welcome, you know, like counterpoint. I'm like, this is... Gets to the point quickly, doesn't try too hard. It's, you know, it's a straightforward to the point where, like, I mean, like even like the list of things that Cullum listed off there might as well be like what you'd find in like a fucking frozen drink or something.
Yeah.
Where it's like these things are designed to make you be like, oh, this is great.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like the video embraces it as well. Yeah. If you've seen it, it's
very
colourful. Pure, just colourful 1980s MTV stuff. And yeah, they've openly admitted that kind of like this is their pop album, so to speak. There's been another reshuffle in the band. I was actually reading, they're not a band, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, oh,
she's
yeah.
the only one contracted.
Well, the one of the founding members, I think a drummer, came back.
Yeah.
And him and his brother took off about 4 years ago. And the brother was just like, yeah, the rest of the band are just like riding on the coattails of Haley's, you know, whatever, ambition. So it seemed like a pretty bad falling out.
Yeah, they're all just kind of hired hands.
Come back, yeah.
Either way, the record is out on May 12th. It's called After Laughter. And about a month later, they'll be in the Olympia Theatre. So we'll see you there.
I'm going to go.
Yeah,
of course,
let's do it.
Let's go. Okay. Up next, a former guest of the show, Elaine May, with The Colour of the Night, the title track of her new EP. So yeah, we had Elaine on a few weeks ago, and she talked about this record coming out, and she talked about this track in particular and how it was especially personal to her, dealing with feelings of loss and grieving. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I was expecting something slightly different, slightly more conventional, and I was quite surprised. Not, I mean, surprised might be the wrong word, but I mean, like this is a, considering the themes and the, like, and even hearing her talk about it, it's brave as all hell, because I mean, like, this is a short track as well,
mm-hmm.
and like the sting in the tail, the kind of the twist here is that the vocals don't come in until quite near the end, and when they do come in, they make their point very resolutely, but it's mm-hmm. it's kind of blink and you'll miss it, and you kind of almost have to go back and go, well, no, wait, what did I just kind of experience there? Because it kind of plays by its own rules. I think it's very brave, I think it's very confident, and I think it's very, very good.
Yeah, I think it builds together extremely nicely as well. It kind of introduces the different strands early on in the track, and then brings them together into something, I suppose, approaching a crescendo, especially when the vocals come in. Yeah, I was really impressed by this song. I like it a lot.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. It's just really effective. And I was kind of just, I was enjoying it and not expecting, as you say, those vocals to come in. And they really just, you know, make their point and then leave. And you're kind of like, not reeling, but you're okay, I need to put that on straight away.
That's the thing. To me it had like an instant, like, I have to put that back on right now. And especially, like, you know, like I don't know about you guys, but like with tracks of the week, I often find that, like, you know, you're kind of juggling them, like, at least on the day of recording, where I'm like, okay, I need to go back and hear this one again a few more times. But this one was more of a natural kind of, you know, like, rhythmic thing for me, just going like, no, I need to hear that
again.
Oh,
yeah, very much.
Not
so.
For, like, you know, just work reasons, but also because I was like, oh, I don't think I quite appreciated what was going on there. And I think, like, it's interesting because in dealing with what this track deals with, like, it's, because she had said before, she said that she'd only really sang it once or twice up until this point, and I guess it's interesting to kind of meet, you know, like the themes in earnest here and kind of be respectful and reflective of what she's dealing with. But at the same time, you're wrapping it up in, as I say, like a sub 4 minute, very accessible track,
yeah,
which, you know, like the meaning of it could just totally be a secondary
thing.
Well,
we've talked about that before, haven't we? The ability, and indeed we'll talk about it later in the show too, but the ability to kind of deal with heavy subjects in an accessible way, I suppose. And something that's actually still enjoyable to listen to, even though it might be, you know, dark or heavy or whatever. And yeah, this is a good example of that. It's a very difficult thing to do, and it's a heck of a skill to have.
Yeah, I guess with those kind of synths, I mean, they remind you of that ambient kind of electronica, maybe late 90s, early 90s, where it was quite kind of melancholic anyway, and like end of the evening. I know this is heavier subject matter than, you know, just some dancey kind of come down, but I think that sound lends itself, once you do get that hit of the lyrics and the vocals coming in, where you're kind of primed a bit for it and you're in that mood. But no, I thought it sounded great. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and the EP gets a live airing in the Workman's Club on May the 5th, so if you're around in Dublin, I would recommend heading along. Let's close out the tracks of the week with some good old fashioned rock and roll. Royal Blood, they're back, Nickelback's favourites. The song is called Lights Out. Don't know if I'd be so sure again. Will it be lights out for the career of Royal Blood?
No, I think they'll be grand, sadly.
Yeah.
Nickelback savers, are they really?
They slagged off Nickelback on Twitter, and Nickelback absolutely
that
rinsed
you
them.
See, I was just assuming that was the Black Keys, but no, the Black Keys was Jack White, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. They're all just in this swirling vortex of bluesy riff rock. this did nothing for me. It's kind of like when Muse try and get a bit groovy without all the kind of craziness and, you know, flying saucers and stuff around it. But it's just such an uninteresting riff.
This is the thing. I mean, when it gets that sort of like instrumental bit, I mean, you couldn't quite call it a solo, but, you know, at least it shows something. Something. Because the rest of it, and I'll tell you exactly my feeling when I heard this, and I know you guys have been in this position. This is the song that's playing in the festival tent when you're walking towards and go, actually, I might just get a burger. This is 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Electric Picnic, Electric Arena stage or something, like, you know.
Yeah,
have a spot down in Rankin's Wood. There's
a kind of little drum break.
I like the drum break as a drummer.
Oh, really? Well, I thought it sounded like a donkey
you just like any drums that get their own moment.
So clumsy sounding, no?
I thought it sounded really good because I thought they beefed up like the production for that moment. And like, again, hello, I'm a fucking drummer. I'm into Nine Inch Nails. That kind of like, and that's Tom Heavy, and like has like a well-tuned snare and gets its own little moment to shine. I'm biased.
Do you know why I didn't like that? Because I think it's so formulaic in terms of
formulaic.
We need to slot something in here.
Yeah.
And I think all of their songs are like that.
They are.
So they're just like, okay, we've got a kind of riff that sounds decent and we're just going to stack it next to that. Now, I know actually if you break down every song ever, that is how it's kind of constructed.
But there is something about Royal Blood where it's weird. Like there's a homogenousness.
Do you know what it
is? Strange.
And I can't remember what a reviewer said this about them years ago, but they're like a band formed from like Rock Band, the video game.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's
they've
been playing away on the things, then they got some real instruments and they're just like, okay, now we're going to just replicate that on real instruments and have massive careers.
It's like the Stripes, an obvious gimmick, I suppose.
Well, the thing is with the White Stripes is that, sorry.
The Stripes.
The Stripes.
It's actually more like the White Stripes in terms of like the bare bones nature things.
Sure,
but
kind of parody thing.
The thing where that worked was that Jack White's actually a very good songwriter and they've an interesting kind of aura about them. And he's a good vocalist, whereas this guy is just like very wishy-washy, doesn't really rise above the kind of riffage around him. And as for the Stripes thing, yeah, I suppose that's,
a friend of mine today, and she said, like, you know, they don't make me want to start a band or even evoke the emotions I come to expect with music. To me, they're a band that you listen to where you're not really into music, but you like music, if that makes
don't
sense.
Sound like music. That's quite a...
But this is the thing. There's a weird disconnect with Royal Blood. Like, for example, right, I mean, like, I didn't mind this at all. I found it fine to throw on while I was kind of like, you know, doing something else. And I felt that way about anything that they've ever done. I can't understand how you could be passionate about Royal Blood.
Every now and then.
There's nothing wrong with them. Yeah. But how could they possibly inspire you to be like, oh my God, they're the best band. They're a band.
Well, it's simple. When you live and die by the riffs, if you get a really good one, then you're away in a hack, basically. And they've done that probably once or twice. That Figure It Out song.
They're really big, though, aren't they, at this point? They're getting there.
They're pretty
anyway.
Big. Yeah. They're big. Yeah.
I agree with the whole casual rock fan, you know, got your jeans on, done up to the kind of waist, maybe voted for Brexit, listening to this. No, I'm out.
But they're in. And I suspect that album number two is their sophomore effort, I believe.
Yes, it is indeed. It's called How Do We Get So Dark.
I think it will chart well. I think it will be reviewed well in the likes of Enemy and that kind of thing. And like, yeah, don't begrudge the two lads, fair play. They make a big sound for two guys, but it's just all very generic to me.
Yeah. So June 16th for that one. You mentioned things that are going to get good reviews. One album has had people falling over themselves in the past week. Kendrick Lamar back with Damn. This is what it sounds like. I know how you work. I know just who you are. See, use a bitch. Your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitch. Heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist. Burn on side a jellyfish. I gauge. See, my pedigree most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you. This is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. That is DNA from the new record. It dropped about 10 days ago by the time this podcast is released, so we've had a good long time to spend with it. Like I say, some people very, very excited within hours of the album's arrival.
Yeah.
With a little longer to contemplate. How do we feel?
I'm enjoying it. It's getting lots of repeat plays for me. Kung Fu Kenny, he's really in you know, a classic rap, 90s rap mode on this album. Oh, yeah. And it, you know what, controversial enough opinion for me here, but didn't hugely love To Pimp a Butterfly as an actual listen, like a whole way through.
Sure.
Can I get a record scratch there, please, Alan?
Well, no, I think it's fair to say, and a lot of people will say that, like, To Pimp a Butterfly is not an easy listen.
It's an exhaustive, it's and challenging, also exhausting listen, I find.
Yeah, and
tremendous piece of work.
Yes, it is.
But you don't throw it on to chill out.
It's very accomplished, and it instantly became like that classic album where I think it's going to be more admired, certainly by me, than it is played. I mean, there's some great stuff, but even when you go full jazz like that, I mean, it's such a long record to get through.
There are bits that are jarring.
And it feels, you know, right from that cover, you know, the cover of the record where, I mean, it's a great shot, but it's like trying to be iconic. And then you end it with a conversation with a dead Tupac.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I love that.
Really?
I think I think it's excellent.
Why do you think it's excellent?
I think because I think it manages to break through the pretension barrier and become actually profound.
Oh, man. How many times have you listened to it in the last year?
In the last year?
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you see, I do listen to that album, to be honest.
No, that track, zero, but like, I listened to the album like a million times.
Whereas this, very, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'm very, very much enjoying it. It's I don't know. I think some people have been underwhelmed just because it is that thing of where do you go after that record.
Sure.
And he has ditched, to a large extent, the kind of jazzier outlier sound of that, and, you know, drawn it back to, you know, funky enough, but sometimes it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's got a slight menace to it, but it's also like, you know, the ghost of like a cassette memory of G-funk. It's kind of like a weathered out modern G-funk thing. But yeah, I don't know. It's a smooth kind of listen. He sounds very, very angry. Not even angry, but kind of resigned on it. It's an interesting one lyrically because it seems that he's reversing his, if not his opinions, then his outlook on the world from the last record, which I think people are struggling with a bit.
I feel he sounds quite comfortable in a way on this. And I don't mean in terms of complacent, but I mean in terms of he understands his role and his place within music and even within kind of political discourse. I mean, he makes wastes no time in bringing up the kind of the Fox News criticism and blah, 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 because he now recognizes, you know, he's not just another artist. He is an extremely important voice in terms of the kind of the cultural landscape. I saw somebody kind of suggesting that this is, you know, him kind of peeking from behind the curtains. I feel it's quite the opposite. I feel this is Kendrick very much taking kind of a central role in all of it and not second guessing himself. He used to have this fascination with sort of trying to interpret things in a relatively kind of objective sense. You know, he'd voice his opinion and then think, you know, and what does this look like or how would this be viewed and blah, blah, blah. Whereas now, you know, there's none of that. It's just him, basically. I wonder if the Kung Fu Kenny thing as a sort of an alter ego is an easy way of kind of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it does strike me as possibly his most personal work, which sounds bizarre, but yeah, it is that thing of,
and certainly when it's getting later in the album as well.
Yeah, and I don't know if I agree with the comfortable thing, because he does talk about his frustrations of becoming this iconic, you know, voice, and he's quite flippant at times where he's just like, you know, I was trying to raise, you know, black artists, but you know, some of them are just rubbish essentially, or black blah blah artists, blah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not his best to ever rhyme, but I appreciate the point. But I think on a lot of this, his despondency at times and his struggles with, I mean, the religious aspects of it being like where he's almost saying everything that is wrong with the world that he kind of discussed from a social, you know, aspect on the last record, he's now saying, well, is this just God? Am I Job? Am I just being constantly tested? It's a weird kind of dark Deuteronomy pop album, quite confessional, but a lot harsher at times than the last one, I thought.
Well, first up, I should say that on the show last week, I very much kind of said I predicted that this record would be a dud, that it would suck. Yeah. And I was being facetious. You know, I was being knowing.
Sure.
No, I was. I mean, I was being
facetious, Dave.
Deliberately knowing, kind of being like, you know, but like, I didn't expect this to be dreadful or nothing, but I just kind of thought, based on the run-up, it's very underwhelmed by The Heart Part 4 and by Humble. And, you know, I'll cut to the quick here. It certainly doesn't suck. Like, far from it.
Yeah.
And it probably never was going to, really. I don't think Humble works still.
Really?
I don't.
See, this is interesting.
I don't think it works.
I think sat on this album right after Loyalty, which is the Rianico feature, and then a song called Pride, which is very much Bedfellow.
Yeah.
I think Humble takes on a completely different sort of context.
It definitely has context, but I just don't. I think it drags it down. This record is a very interesting one, and it's difficult to really kind of know even where I stand, even to, like, you know, a week on, because I mean, like, first of all, I mean, like, I know I'm repeating myself here, but like, it just frustrates me when I see 5-star reviews up at 12:30 on the day of release. You're like, how can you possibly arrive at that conclusion?
Right,
it's nonsense.
We know that, yeah.
But I just feel like there's such a hard on for Kendrick Lamar at the moment, and rightly so, for a lot of reasons. He's brilliant. But I feel like a lot of people are just leading with their heart and not with their head. And I kind of wish that there would be some kind of correlation there.
Well, provide it for us, Dave.
Well,
he's
not infallible. I mean, like, this record is not 5 stars. This record is not 10 out of 10. This record is not perfect. It has duds. It has missteps. On a personal level, I was waiting for it to be something different. I think the first track, and the first two tracks, Blood and DNA, are some of his best work.
Quite the opening, yeah.
The opening is so evocative, it creates such an atmosphere instantly that it sucks you into it. And I was waiting for something. I was expecting the rest of the record to follow suit and stitch together and have those sutures, but it doesn't quite have it. Like, it threatens something otherworldly and strange, and almost like, you know, is Kendrick in purgatory now? Are we in his headspace as he's dying? Was he shot in the opening track? Instead, you just get a bunch of jams.
Well,
for the most part. Now, granted, there is, like, you know, it does there is an overarching story here, but this is the one instance where I would have welcomed skits and interludes a lot more than there are,
because just to break it up, so to speak,
but to kind of go back in there and give me more of where he is in the first track, because there's something so strange and cinematic and like, or something out of a great novel in that opening where I'm like, fuck, this is like, there's something here, and then it's just like DNA comes in, and I think DNA is one of the best songs he's ever written. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
Absolutely, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's flawless. And then, you know, it's kind of a little bit diminishing returns as it goes along. And not in a particularly overt way, but you're just kind of like, by the end of it, when he does return, he does dovetail this record with,
yeah,
you know, like like where he's at the start of the record. And I don't quite feel like the in-between totally syncs up.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
as a narrative.
That's the thing with Kendrick, and actually it feeds into your thing of immediate, like, five-star reviews. Like, I don't think anyone's parsed through these lyrics enough to actually fully understand how, because there is these kind of sutures and points on the record where we might not get a full explanatory skit, but there's kind of backwards recordings and lines that we're hearing flipped, and the way you have those gunshots at the opening and the closing, and, you know, closing with this story of how, a quite insane story, actually.
Oh, yeah.
How his father was nearly killed by his boss.
That track, by the way, Duckworth.
It's amazing.
I love it.
It's such an example of why we should really care about Kendrick.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
As much as you can go, okay, he's being crap on a few features, and he's being lauded to the hilt, it's because he can do this.
Oh, I mean, like, know? In terms of a storytelling track, I mean, I was trying to think, I mean, like, something since Nas, basically.
Really does.
It's very difficult.
But yeah, I agree with Dave in terms of, I don't know what the line true is in every track, but I've no doubt there is stuff there, and I haven't figured out what point of view he's occasionally talking from.
I think a lot of it is about disconnection, especially as you say, Craig, like where he kind of recognises that he's sitting on a throne of sorts, one which has been tainted and poisoned by recent events in the world, and how, like, you know, his world has been flipped over, as have those who really look up to him as something of an iconic figure. And he gets that across very well. I mean, like, for example, like, I mean, like with Blood, like a wonderful skewering of the horrible Fox News like culture, to use their quotes against them so well by just presenting them plainly, and they come across so ignorant and so just horrible. And then, like, you know, to reference Geraldo Rivera and his totally asinine comments about how hip hop is worse for black people than racism.
Unbelievable.
It's phenomenal, isn't it? Like, how could you possibly? And of course, did you know that Geraldo Rivera has responded to this?
Yeah,
in an 18-minute Facebook video, he started off by saying, aside from Drake, in my opinion, Kendrick Lamar probably is the best hip hop artist out there today. So you're like, cool, stop there.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He says, hip hop is the worst role model, it is the worst example, it is the most negative possible message. And what's the point of it? I mean, you sell records, I get that. You sell records, I get the stuff is, you know, popular, but it avoids the central reality, just as Black Lives Matter avoids the central reality.
Oh, well, there you go.
He goes on to say, I know the real danger to real black men and real brown men now is that their role model was singing about cops being killers and the system being stacked and there's no chance of advancement and all the rest of it. He said that the issue of police brutality pales in comparison to the ghetto civil war that's being waged around America, and says, I have no beef with Kendrick Lamar or anyone else in the business.
Oh, thank God he didn't start a beef with
but
him.
If you don't have a positive attitude, you're dooming yourself to a life that you profess to despise. So good to know that Geraldo Rivera learned nothing.
I mean,
keep hiding behind that mustache, Geraldo.
To be fair as well, like, in this week of all weeks, I think we should recognise that listening to any of the mouth flapping of some stupid Fox News dickhead.
Absolutely. I mean, right. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, like there's no, no one needs to be convinced. He's buried himself 6 feet under there. And I do think that, like, Kendrick taking the high road and, you know, kind of using his art to provide a criticism, he does it so well. And DNA is fucking brilliant. Like, it's an incredible song. But there's a point where, like, I mean, he has a line in one of the tracks, I think it's or maybe it's Element, where he says about his niece. And he says, my niece sees me on TV and she, like, flips out. And he's like, well, that's who I'm, you know, that's what I care about. He's like, you know, I'm not using, like, myself as this brand to be, like, you know, this kind of to sell people, to deceive people.
Yeah.
This, and that to me was a real human moment. And it was great. And those little moments, obviously Duckworth is packed with them as well.
Yeah.
And they're the moments that interested me the most on this record. That and the idea of some kind of, you know, what's really going on here, which of course, you know, people took this to extremes when people thought there was going to be a second album.
Yeah.
2 days later on Easter Sunday, like, you know, Kendrick dies and rises again and turned out not to happen. But I quite loved that. I thought it was fun to watch people kind of run away with themselves in that regard.
Oh yeah, I'm glad it didn't happen.
So
because,
am I,
because
I think it would detracted. I think it would dilute this record, yeah. Much like Blonde diluted Endless a bit. And like, granted, you know, Endless I think is a great work, but I just feel like if you want to cobble together a narrative, really, and I always do with records, to me, this breaks up into three parts, and it's the first four or five tracks, yeah. Then it's the next kind of almost six tracks,
yeah.
Culminating with XXX, which of course features U2.
With Bono.
And
sparingly, thankfully.
And then, yeah, he's barely in it.
It's very,
then, yeah.
It's very well done, I think. Actually,
well,
yeah.
Well, in terms of features, the Rihanna one's fine. It's grand.
Yeah, it's grand.
I like it. I mean, it's a radio hit, but it's actually... Do you know what's good about it is it, because it could be a very simple radio hit dealing with kind of, you know, loyalty, blah, blah, blah. But the way, say, Drake would do that song would just be like, as he did in, like, you know, verbatim on his last record where he's just like, I can't trust people anymore. I'm sad. Whereas Kendrick makes it about the whole issue of what you're committed to and who you can actually... Like, he's just such a different tier as a lyricist that even that is quite subversive if it becomes a big radio jam. And Rihanna kind of raps on it as well, which is cool. She doesn't do that enough.
And I think she kind of softens Kendrick's delivery somewhat.
I mean, she's great on everything, really.
Yeah. Throughout this record, that's one thing that I suppose may kind of stand in the way of being an easy arc to spot is that he... changes his delivery so well from sort of angry barking to just like gentle drawling or whatever.
Yeah.
Even sometimes within the same song, it's outstanding.
Pride, Humble and Lust is where the record kind of loses me a bit.
Oh, Pride's amazing.
See, I think they're great tracks.
I think Pride's good. I think Humble still sticks out like a sore thumb.
Lust is kind of sonically not that interesting, but I think as a character study, it's very good.
I think it's a bit of a snoozer. And I mean, like, I like Love, with Zachary on
it's
which
nice,
sounds,
actually.
You know, kind of almost
it's
like
Frankish.
Sounds like a Bieber song here and there. Bono, I don't need him. Like
I really like
he
that
doesn't
hook.
Embarrass himself, but I don't need him.
The lyric is really good on it as well, so I thought it's a nice idea.
I thought it was trying too hard to be like...
It is Bono.
But in general, I thought that song was trying too hard to paint this image of America as this kind of, you know, vaudevillian nightmare, but he's already done it. Like that to me was... We've gotten this already from what you said earlier, and now you're saying it for the cheap seats?
I don't know. I disagree. I think the atmosphere of it was really intense.
When those sirens drop.
The siren drop is amazing. Excellent. Yeah. That is brilliant. Yeah. But I just feel like the correlation in that track, I don't think quite syncs up.
No,
it's by no means a failure or anywhere close to it. I just think it's a bit of a bumpy road.
I think this
album ultimately registers as a bit of a bumpy road. And I wonder if I'm going to change my mind on it. Because like, there's so much here to absolutely love and fall in love with. Mm-hmm. And I do find it a lot more replayable than To Pimp a Butterfly. I think it's a smart move to not try and do To Pimp a Butterfly 2.
Very much so.
I think this is the right move for him. And I think it's an album full of individual highlights. And yet, from start to finish, I do find my attention waning. And it's weird because like there's so much directness here. And again, as we said before, like it goes without saying, but we'll say it again, his command, his ability is, I mean, it's... There's no one to touch him. I mean, but there's just something here where I was like... I think I'm the problem. I feel like...
With everything.
Well, sure, why not? With this podcast, at least. But on this record, I mean, like,
he rips off the mask to reveal he's Geraldo Rivera.
It was Geraldo all along. Well, God damn you, for a year.
I can't grow facial hairs, so you know it's not me. I just really fell in love with those opening 2 minutes so hard that I propped myself up for something that didn't come.
Right, okay.
Well, isn't this like every relationship you've ever tried to enter, Dave? Maybe the problem is with you. Had to do it, come on. After the problem was with me.
7.5 out of 10 for me.
This, I really enjoyed. I really enjoy this record. I agree that it doesn't have some of the gravitas, I suppose, of To Pimp a Butterfly, but it's eminently listenable. It's enjoyable. As I kind of mentioned earlier, the ability to sort of address something substantial, but then make it into something that can be, you know, a bit of a banger. Mm. You could put this on at the summer barbecue, you know?
Oh, we're like, back to the summer barbecue.
Back to the summer barbecue test, yeah.
Are the three of us going to do a summer barbecue where we all come at it from different musical styles?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, we can make that happen.
But yeah, no, this record is very, very good. I am going to say 8.5.
Oh, And I'm going to say something similar. I'm going to say 8. I think, to sum up, Good Kid, Mad City still his best record. But no, I think this has a lot of replay value. Dave, I hope you're going to stick with it. Because
I hope that we're still friends after what you just said to me.
I mean,
stick in there, Dave.
Let's end with the question that a lot of people seem to be throwing around.
My jaw actually dropped.
Can we say, is he the GOAT?
Of all time.
No.
No?
He didn't write Illmatic.
Fair, yeah. I don't know. I'm starting to think he might be.
I mean, he's
his
yeah.
level of versatility.
I think he's
going
to get better as well. That's why I was kind of in the run up to this album. I was thinking, oh God, am I gonna be tired? Am I not gonna dig this? No, this is very interesting for me. I thought this was the right step for him to take at this particular moment in time. And while he doesn't have that kind of booming, kind of really charismatic voice of Pac, I think lyrically, he's as good as it gets.
All right. What else should people be taking a listen to?
Well, I should reiterate, we mentioned it last week, the album from Talos is out now.
Yeah, it's out now, indeed it is.
Wild Alley. And last week on the show, Rory Bantam said that he reckons it's a surefire first ballot for the Choice Prize next year when it rolls around. And I got to say, I mean, it'll take 10 particularly great records to knock it out of there because this is an excellent debut. And if you've never heard him before, just dive right in. I don't think you'd be disappointed. Apart from that, I've been listening to a couple of records, which I'm not going to tell you what I think of them. Because we'll probably be talking about them in depth on the next episode. Because there's a day, May the 5th, right? Like, apart from Elaine May playing that gig, there's so much music on that day. It's actually ridiculous. There are so many albums coming out, it's very hard to kind of parse it down. But I've been focusing on the new album from Horror, the debut.
Ho-9909.
As they're also known. United States of Horror. And also, At the Drive-In. Their first record in 17
years. Boys.
My boys. That's kind of what's been on my stereo.
It's going to be an angry review section next week, kids.
And because I'm going to give you some thoughts on those next week, I'll hold back for now.
Yeah. Okay. I've been listening to Joey Badass, this new one, and I have to say I'm quite pleased because we were kind of waiting to see if he'd, you know, deliver. All-American Badass is kind of, I mean, it's not a masterpiece. I mean, he's not approaching Kendrick level at this moment in time. And he does kind of grapple with a lot of political and social stuff that can be a bit on the nose, but it sounds great. It's an update of that 90s thing, that retro thing that he had to leave behind a bit, I think.
Yeah.
And in terms of his voice, he's sounding really strong. So yeah, very good. Check that out.
Yeah, I do like that record. He seems to be maturing a little bit. But yeah, not quite at Kendrick's level.
Not quite.
Just yet.
Well, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you. Good
Craig,
to be back.
Craig, thanks so much for that.
Did we survive this? Is our relationship going to go on?
I'll think about it.
A bombshell at the end. Okay.
We'll see. It's quite the bombshell. It's only half true. Okay, my boys, my lovely, lovely boys, thank you so much. Until next week. As always, we will play out with some Irish tunage.
And it's one of my boys.
It's one of Cullum's boys. It's Cullum's best boy, I would say, from Cork. Why don't you lead this one in?
Yeah.
For all time's sake.
Toby Carr, he joined us back last summer on the show.
What a summer it was.
Now based in London.
Summer of Toby.
And yeah, he's released a new track. He said he's had it for a while, actually. It's called Promises. Vocoder heavy. And a bit of a banger.
It's a banger.
It is a banger.
I like it a lot. My name is David William Hanrady. This has been No Encore. There will be no encore. Here's Toby Carr.
See you. Hanging at the cream tree with your mama, your mama. Never funny, you never brought the drama, the drama. And with the scream, clear, I'm not afraid to
tripping it in brand new cars, my cars. Hanging at the crib, chilling with your mommy, your mama. Never bothered you, never brought the drama. Now you flip the screen, play a please. I'm in the sky, you broke a promise, I promise. Looking at your baby, being different numbers and numbers. Are you on your phone, hanging with them colors of sun? Hanging with my girl, you always looking jealous and jealous. That is what you're doing, being brand new cars, my cars. Hanging at the crib, chilling with your mommy, your mama. Never bothered you, never brought the drama.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
The sweat of nervous virgins. It's an amazing tipple.
Celebrate this July 4th with a special presentation of A Capital 4th. Join your host, Vanessa Williams, with performances from sea to shining sea, starring Jimmy Buffett, Gladys Knight, Alan Jackson, Cynthia Erivo, Pentatonix, Renee Fleming, Train, Jennifer Nettles, Mickey Guyton, Jimmy Allen, Ali'i Cravalho, Laura Osnes, Ali Stroker, and the greatest live fireworks display in the USA. It's A Capital 4th, sponsored by the Boeing Company and American Airlines, Sunday, July 4th, 8, 7 Central, only on PBS.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.